You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Looking around, I finally see. I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee. My world, I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough.
And I'm your host, Rachel Jameson.
Welcome, everyone. Glad you're joining us today. Today, we're going to talk about homestead tool maintenance, repair, and organizing. Kind of a general, I don't really know how to really put it. We're going to cover lots of things on those in those areas, but it's something that I work at, sometimes struggle at. I don't know about you, Rachel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. Before we jump into that, though, how's things going on the old homestead?
Well, they're going pretty good. We've been preserving a deer that the hubby got on opening day, and we let hang for a while.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. I'm happy for you guys and a little jealous. I said this year I'm going to get out. I'm going to do a lot more hunting. I've only been out a couple times, and I just haven't been getting myself out there. I need to get out there. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Your hunting season end?
Well, if I'm hunting bow, there's the late archery. It goes into January. So I still got plenty of time, but I might end up doing more hunting in the late archery season. Cause generally the woods are just empty at that time. Cause it's so cold out. Yeah. Nobody's going hunting, but I actually like it. I actually like hunting in that time. I love it when there's just a lot of snow on the ground and it's just cold. I just enjoy hunting at that time of the year, but most people don't. So
it's a lot more peaceful in the woods during bow season. That's for sure.
It is. It is. Yeah. The late archery is a lot more peaceful. And there's just, like I said, there's nobody out there then. Everybody's done, did their thing, and they've got out of it. But so are you guys freezing, canning? How are you doing this?
The freezer is full. So I have, I probably have 15 pounds of venison roast curing in for corned venison.
Oh, wow.
And then we did probably about 10 pounds for beef jerky. And I'm going to cube up the rest and can it.
Nice. Yeah. Was it a decent sized deer?
It was. I should weigh it. It was a really big bodied buck. And it was the healthiest buck that we have seen in a long time. My husband had been hunting at a friend's property. And there's a lot of corn and soy and it's just closer to town. And I think the deer there, they were still healthy, but they would have a lot of ticks on them. Mm. I mean, just embedded in their fur. And this one, we actually got out at our property. And there's lots more swamps and it's much more rural. And so I think this deer was probably eating more of a natural diet that deer is supposed to eat. And we didn't find any ticks on it. And the inside organs were just, they were beautiful. Of course, we eat the organs. So liver was just beautiful. It was the best liver I've seen in a long time. Sometimes the last few we had seen they weren't bad. There was no worms or anything in them, but they just had, weren't that beautiful color.
Like the lighter dollar color. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they didn't have that beautiful color. They had maybe a little bit too much fat in them. Mm-hmm. This one, it was just beautiful. And there was no ticks. We didn't see any ticks, which is, kind of controversial, but.
Did he get it on Thanksgiving Day?
No, he got it opening day.
Oh, okay.
In the morning. He texted me, I forget. It was maybe 10 o'clock. Oh, I got one. And I'm like, wow, that was fast. Nice. Yeah, and he was nice, of course. Of course, we hunt for food, and so we're not going after trophies. And mm-hmm. if you know, but he was very, he's always also very happy when it has horns. So this one was a really nice 8-point.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations to him.
So we might try to do a European mount, which is where you, it's just the skull, not, you know, not the, what do you call it? With the fur and everything left on, you basically boil everything away. And it's just, I'm kind of excited to try that.
That'll be neat. I had the last episode, I had the Homesteaders of Indiana on, and the lady I was interviewing there, Brooke, her husband, I think had already gotten 3 deer. And I was like, I'm so jealous.
Wow.
I think that's what she said. They'd been out. We was talking before the show started. And she said, they're doing a lot of processing of deer right now. And I was like, wow, 3. That's a lot. That's amazing. Yeah. In here, I haven't even got a chance to see one yet. A couple times I went out.
Yeah. So I am, if anybody wants to email us or email me, I am looking for recipes for the tenderloin. I've never really, this one had beautiful, cause it was a bigger buck. So it's got some very light, nice, tenderloin. And I've really never done a lot with those. So if anybody has some good recipes or anything, I'm looking, I don't really want to cure those and I don't want to can them, cause you know, it's the tenderloin.
Yeah. When it comes to tenderloin, I honestly don't even like to do anything with it. I like to use salt and
really,
yeah, throw it in a cast iron skillet, and I mean, I slice it up and you know, nice little
medallion
cuts. So yeah, just I mean, that to me, and I could just eat those year round. That's my favorite, absolute favorite to eat right there.
Nice. But
yeah, I don't want to do anything else with it. My wife will talk about, you know, putting some kind of marinade on them or something. I'm like, don't you touch that. That's perfect the way it is. Cause she has to marinade. She really doesn't really like deer meat that much, but she will marinate it and she'll eat it. But it has to be some kind of marinade or a lot of extra something. She just picks up on that little bit of gaminess and it bugs her, which me, I don't mind it. I love it. And
I suspect this one will be more gamey because our property has some swamp, and I suspect it was probably eating a lot of that like bark and where we had hunted before, they were probably getting a lot of like corn and stuff because it was cornfields. But
if you're not sensitive to it, you probably wouldn't even notice.
When
it,
we though. First got married, which was almost 30 years ago, I had never ate wild game because, you know, I was kind of a city girl, and my dad grew up eating tons of wild game because my grandpa was a DNR officer. So he got lots of wild game.
Oh yeah.
And my dad got burned out on it and didn't want anything to do with it. And so I never had had it. And when we first got married, I was like, this is the nastiest. What is this?
Yeah.
But now it's just kind of become part of it. We've gotten used to it.
It's kind of funny because I think of the meats I eat the most. Of course, everybody eats a lot of beef and pig and, you know, chicken. But I eat obviously a lot of rabbit and quail because we raise a lot of that throughout the year. But then I would say the next meat I eat the most of is probably squirrel meat. I mean, because I shoot a lot of squirrels every year. I mean,
we
I go out squirreling.
Start eating it again. We were eating a lot of it. When we first got married and we were poor.
Yeah.
We ate a lot of squirrel
meat. I like it. You just got to know how to cook it to where it's tender. And it's really good. It's one of my favorite meats, though. It's up there in the you know, top 5 or 6 anyway. You know, I like all kinds, but I eat a lot of squirrel meat. But yeah, deer is, you know, something that the family will eat. Like I said, it just depends on how it's cooked, how it's prepared. You know, everybody will eat it and enjoy it.
Right.
But yeah, I know.
Yeah. Good stuff. And my little indoor garden, I think I talked about that last week. My microgreens are up and rolling. So we've been kind of munching on those.
I'm still not starting those yet. I need to get with it.
You have your greenhouse. So tell us how that's going.
Well, it's growing good. Nothing's ready to eat yet. Everything's up though. Everything's doing good. Things are like, I mean, I could if I wanted to eat it in like a microgreen state, but I'm looking to grow more full plants in that system. But the lettuce is almost ready. I have some lettuce actually growing in some pots in there, and that is almost ready to pick. So I could definitely harvest from that probably this week and start eating some of that. I told you my cherry tomato plant bit the dust last week when it got really cold. Well, it was funny because about half of it turned brown, and I went ahead and just picked all the cherry tomatoes off. There was quite a few on there. I mean, there was a dozen or so on there, so I didn't do anything with it. I just left it, and the half that didn't die started popping out all these cherry tomatoes. So I got like probably 20 more cherry tomatoes off of it. So I don't know what happened there. I don't know this stress. You know how a plant, when it gets kind of stressed, it'll just kind of go into survival mode, just start putting off a lot of fruit and seed and ripening everything because it starts preparing to produce it, reproduce itself. And I think that's what it did. It just went into this state where it just started popping out all these cherry tomatoes. And it was kind of funny. But yeah, it put off a whole bunch. It's probably officially done now, though, I would say. But yeah, doing that. Got out, middle of the last week, and every year I coppice my mulberry trees. And I mean, when I say coppice them, I take them to about a foot tall. Okay. You know, I take them right pretty close to the ground. And one of them's really big. One of them gets about 25 feet tall in a year, which blows my mind how tall it gets.
It is mind-blowing how fast those
grow. That one is, really does blow my mind. It grows so fast and gets so bushy and big that it's amazing. And I probably wouldn't even mess with it at this point and coppice it, but where it's at, there's actually power lines above it. And I try to keep it out of this power because it reaches them every year, and I cut it almost to the ground every year, and it reaches to those power lines every year. So I try to keep it down, but yeah, I went out and did that and got a lot of wood from that. So,
do you, get fruit off of them when you coppice them or no?
I do not. Okay. They just produce a lot of leaves and limbs. That one particularly is the one I planted outside of where I keep my rabbits, generally in their cages. So I had it there just for that purpose, just to give them small branches and leaves. But I think next year I'm going to do more of a tree hay setup with that tree, and I'm going to coppice it pollard it midsummer when it's full of leaves, and try to put up a lot of those branches with leaves on them and try to save those into the winter. And I'm going to really focus on that, I think, with the mulberry trees next year.
Will the rabbits eat some of the smaller branches too? The leaves?
They love the branches. I'll stick, pinky size sticks in there, and they eat them entirely. Yeah, they love them. They love the bark.
Wow, that's cool.
They really chew them up good. It's one of their favorites. So, yeah,
a wild one, or did you purchase that tree?
No, it's a wild one. Actually, the neighbors about three houses down, they have a huge, like one of the biggest mulberry trees I've ever seen. So you just get them popping up everywhere.
Yep. Ones that we have in our yard here, that's what those are. Our neighbor has a tree that popped up from probably somebody else's yard.
Yeah.
And then they started popping up in our yard. So we dug them up, placed them where we wanted them. But now we're like finding other babies that were just like, what do we do with all these?
But I've planted three of them on the property, but I transplanted them from where they were popped up. They popped up wherever, and I just moved them. And and they're growing really, really good where they're at. And they put off only one of them actually gives me berries, which is, but there are male and female mulberry trees. But the one I don't care. I wish the other one did. I kind of planted it where I planted it, hoping it would give me berries. But it's a couple years old now, and it's not produced any berries, so I don't think it will.
Out at our property, those ones were hybrid mulberries that we actually purchased. But these ones, and then I did buy one ever-bearing mulberry for the orchard. Yeah. The other ones were hybrids that I bought for coppicing and pollarding. But the ones we have here at the house are all the wild ones.
Have you ever seen those, I think they're called Pakistan mulberry trees? And they got super long mulberries, probably like five, six inches long. I mean, from the pictures I've seen, they look like they're probably 4 to 6 inches long, really super long mulberries. I think they're called Pakistanian mulberries or something like that.
They probably wouldn't survive here.
I don't know about Michigan. I think they will in Indiana. Maybe they will. I don't know. But they look really interesting. I've thought about ordering one of those just to give it a try.
I love mulberries. In fact, every year, the only thing I don't like about them is, they're messy.
I did a whole podcast episode on mulberry trees one time, and there are pros and cons to mulberries, and you do not to plant one where you're going to be parking your car or anywhere close to where you're going to be parking your car, because it will make you hate the tree. A lot of people despise mulberry for that reason.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what happened. The mulberry trees that came into our yard are from the neighbor's tree, and that is right over our driveway.
Yeah.
So the birds eat them and then purple poop onto the car, our cars.
Yep.
And then everywhere. Of course they completely trash the driveway all summer long. But
There's a place for them, like everything. It's just proper design and putting them where you want to put them. And then, like I said, it's one of my favorite fruits. I love mulberries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'll eat them to where I'm almost sick.
And the whole thing is edible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're a great tree to have if you have them in the right place.
In the right spot. Yeah. I'm thinking that, I'm hoping that once mine actually produce fruit, that the neighbor maybe cuts theirs down.
Well, like I said, my neighbor's down the street. It's the biggest mulberry tree I've ever seen. Wow. You'd think this thing was like a, I don't know. It's the size of it. Like I would think an oak tree or something. I mean, this thing is gigantic. Wow. I mean, it is. I've been around mulberry trees all my life. I've never seen one as big as this one.
That's crazy.
So I don't know how old it is. It'd be curious to kind of maybe figure out how to determine the age of a mulberry tree and kind of figure out how old that thing is. Cause it's gotta be one of the oldest ones I've ever seen.
Huh? Yeah. We used to have one when I was a kid that we would climb and eat, but as a kid, I would climb it and it felt big, but I don't think it was huge like an oak tree. Yeah, it was just really big. But I don't know where the song Around the Mulberry Bush came from, because I've yet to see a mulberry bush. They usually turn into trees.
It's really how you cut them. Like the one that I cut down every year, it's as wide as a bush. Now it has a single stump, but because I cut it so low, it just pops up in several sprouts every year around kind of off that bottom stump. And it's really wide. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, I'm going to guess by the time it gets 6 foot tall, it's probably over 10 feet wide at that point.
Yeah. The more I cut the top off, the more bushy it tries.
Yeah.
We try to cut the bottoms up just so we can mow around it easier, but
so I like having them, but that was my week on the homestead. Not a lot of interesting updates, but
same here, but busy. It was Thanksgiving week.
We always got to tell people, we record these a week ahead. So that you're hearing this a couple weeks after Thanksgiving, but last week was Thanksgiving here. So busy week, lots going on for sure.
I did lots and lots of cooking this week. And then of course I have broth in my big roaster pan from my turkey going right now, that I'll can, and turkey to can and venison to can. Apparently I'm canning a lot this week.
Yeah. You started right back up again with the busyness of all that, didn't you? Wow.
it's like that fall season where you just do that a lot. And then December to, February is a little bit slower, which brings us into the topic.
Yeah. Today, there you go. I mean, when things do slow down, we can focus on this, which is homestead tool maintenance, repair, and organizing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, when I start thinking about getting stuff in order, which I will admit, this isn't so seasonal for me. It's more of a year round thing for me, but I think wintertime is a great time. The slow times are a great time to really focus on it. Make sure you got all your ducks in a row, get everything kind of taken care of. And maybe I need to do a better job of that when it is slow. Because like I said, I do it throughout the year a lot when I probably don't have time to do it. And it seems like I kind of overwhelm myself with things going on. If I probably did just take the time when it's really slow in the wintertime, it would be better year round for me to do that. But a lot of services and stuff, if you're using equipment a lot, you have to do that kind of year round anyway. If you're using, a piece of equipment or whatever that needs routine maintenance and service, you kind of have to do that when it's due. You can't just necessarily wait till winter on some of that stuff. But that being said, it's a great time to clean tools up, to gather your stuff up. If you got a garage or whatever, get them in there, get things cleaned up, ready for the next year, all your equipment, all your tools. Keeping your tools clean will help them last longer, will make them work better for sure, especially if they're starting to take on rust, cleaning rust and stuff off of them.
Well, and even like the sharpening and stuff like that of the tools that we're going to talk about, it helps you physically, because gardening and homesteading can be physically demanding. But if you have the tools working properly, you're going to not be killing yourself to make that hoe cut those weeds down if it's actually sharp and stuff like that.
Exactly. But and I don't know, we're modern homesteaders, we have lots of power equipment, lots of power equipment. So I mean, there's rototillers, there's lawnmowers, there's your trimmers, your chainsaws, your chipper shredders, you have a tractor. I mean, there's a lot going on. You have a lot of mechanical equipment that needs, you know, oil changes, spark plugs, you need to grease it, belt replacements, hose replacements, bearing maintenance. You was telling me about how your tractor's blowing O-rings quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
because the implements, I think it's because our property is quite hilly and bumpy and we've been cleaning logs and stuff up with it. So the tractor's moving a lot, but we started just keeping several O-rings with us.
Yeah.
Like, I think my husband even keeps them like on the tractor at this point now, because otherwise you're blowing hydraulic. Wow. Well, we don't want the hydraulic fluid leaking all over.
Yeah.
That's not healthy on your property for the soil. Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, if he notices it's leaking too much, he'll replace that. He's gotten pretty handy doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and most of this stuff, you could wait till you're not using it in the wintertime and do a lot of this maintenance. Like, I don't touch my lawnmower through the summer. I mean, I just use it.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, sometime through the winter, I will go ahead and change the spark plug and change the oil in it, get it ready to go. Do the same thing with a rototiller before spring. I'll go ahead and get it ready if I'm going to use a rototiller that year. Chainsaws, now I'll be using them in early winter. But then at some point in the winter, I'll stop. You know, we're done cutting things with the chainsaw, unless you get an ice storm or something that's going to bring down some trees or something. You might need it. So I'll make sure I've got a bunch of extra chains and I'll get all them sharpened up, get the chainsaws cleaned up, spark plug changed, get everything good on them, you know, ready to go. The chipper. Now, this was the first year I actually got a gas powered chipper shredder.
Okay.
So that'll be something, you know, I'll be maintaining this winter and go ahead and change oil in it and tune it up, get it ready to go. You know, just those kind of things, you know, I mean, just stuff you're going to use in the next year, get it ready to go. And it's a good time to do that. When it's just the downtime, it's a slow time, you know, when you don't have time to do those things, you know, you won't, quite honestly, you just won't, and things won't last as long and things are going to wear out. And you're going to end up having a repair rather than just a service. So it's just better to do that ahead of time.
It is better, because you also end up having tools in working order when you need them. And there's nothing worse than you have a certain amount of time to get something done and then having a tool, well, they're going to break anyways, but not having it maintained well makes it more likely to break. And it's just nice to reach in there in the spring when you're trying to get your garden in and have those tools ready to go.
Absolutely.
Because for us up here, our season is short and I literally usually have like a couple of weeks between our last frost and when we don't have snow to plant stuff.
Yeah. So, a friend of mine, I mean, it seems like every spring I know I've talked to him before and he's like, oh, I was going to do some, cause he does rototills his entire garden. He does market gardening. Actually, he sets up at the farmer's market, got a real nice rototiller. And it was just this last spring, he had to send his rototiller off to get it fixed, cause he's not a mechanical guy. He really didn't know a lot about it right when he needed to be rototilling, you know, and getting stuff in the ground. He had to send it off to get it repaired. And I think it was down all winter and he just didn't get around to it. And then he was I forgot, you know, and had to do it. And
it's not like those things won't happen, but
if
we do everything we can to avoid it, it's better.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, there's also beyond the power equipment, you know, that's just basic maintenance. It's just things you have to do, but I like to take the time to actually take care of my hand tools, like my axes, my hammers, you know, things like that. Especially a lot of my tools have wooden handles.
Right.
And wooden handles need a little bit of care. I mean, they will last several years without any care, but they will last a lot longer. I mean, you can hand them down to your grandkids if you take care of them properly in some cases. Axes, sometimes not, depending on how good you are with an axe, you tend to crack a handle or whatever here and there. But, you know, if they just get dry, they're more apt to do that, to crack and break and get loose. If they dry out, they get too loose or whatever. So I do treat. I don't probably do it every year, but every 2 to 3 years, I'm usually doing the linseed oil treatment on them. I do. There's other things you can use. Now there's three different kinds of linseed oil. You can use the raw, you can use the boiled. And then there's like I can't think of the other one. There's one that's actually like boiled. It's a high heat treatment, but it's actually, and I don't even know, I need to look into it because it's really super fast drying, like the boiled. That's the reason you would want boiled over the raw, is it dries a lot faster than the raw.
Which is safer.
But it also, they have a chemical process that they do with it, and it actually gets metallic stuff in the linseed oil in the boiled ones. I don't know if you knew that. So there's actually some reasons you might not want to use boiled.
Right.
Because if people who are just super sensitive to any kind of a chemical process or whatever, it could, or they're worried about it, whether they should be or not, I don't know. But again, boiled dries way, way faster. I have used both, and it's 20 times faster on the drying and curing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because it could take months, 3 or 4 months sometimes for raw. It depends on the temperature and how much good airflow you have. If you do it in a cold barn or whatever and leave it set.
Oh, it's going to stay forever. Yeah.
Yeah, it could like 3 months before it cures. 3-4 months before it cures. So I always put them in a room that's a little bit warmer and let them dry if I'm doing it, if I'm using raw. There is another one, like I said, that is high heat, but they do it under pressure.
Okay.
I can't remember what that one's called. Poly something. I can't remember exactly. I feel bad for not looking this up, but it's actually safe. It's the high heat boils, and so it dries quick, so but it doesn't use the chemical process because they do it with like a pressure. They were able to raise the heat, keep it fireproof basically by putting it under like pressure to get a high heat.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's one of the issues with it. I don't know if you've ever used it, but I have actually just used coconut oil. I know it sounds crazy.
You can use all kinds of oils. There's a lot of different things you can use. Linseed's kind of a traditional old school.
That is the
thing.
traditional old school one. And I think it probably works better than coconut oil. But you know, if you're overly worried about chemicals in your garden or anything like that in your garden, and if you just want to use what you have on hand, I've actually heard of people using even like vegetable oil and stuff like that. Although vegetable oil as it ages gets kind of sticky.
Yeah. And then there's just issues with, when you're using a food grade oil like that, that might, I guess it could go rancid.
Yeah. It gets all sticky and nasty.
So you could have those issues with those kind of oils where you won't get that with linseed oil. It just doesn't seem to go that way. But, so it's good. There's other things you can use, natural products even that you can use, but I generally use the linseed oil. And actually, I generally use the raw. Actually, I have a heated room in my barn and I generally just stick it in there. And it's usually dry within a week. And then it takes probably about another month to really cure in a heated room with good airflow.
So this is something I need to do with mine. And I've actually bought boiled though.
Yeah, boiled's
good. I actually bought some boiled and hopes to actually get this done this year.
Yeah, it cures within a couple of weeks, I think, on the boiled. Yeah, maybe a week or so. Yeah,
I might have to bring them inside. Good. We have like a catch-all junk room that's smallish, and I might have to bring it inside and put it in there for a little bit because our garage is not heated at all.
Yeah.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, but it works well, and I like to do that with my axes and my hammers and my wheelbarrow handles. I got wooden handles on my wheelbarrow, and those get really dry because you leave those things out in the sun. I mean, I'll just flip my wheelbarrow over and leave it out weeks at a time, you know, outside. And so it gets a lot of weather, you know, hitting them handles. So I do hit those more often. I probably do hit those every year with something I've actually had to replace those because I didn't take care of them in the past and had to put new handles on my wheelbarrow. Yeah.
I think when we bought our two-wheeled wheelbarrow, ours is not none of it's wood.
Yeah.
And we bought the one with the plastic tub. I love traditional tools, but
I hate to say it, but with like this axe, I just bought a new axe last week or 2 weeks ago. And it doesn't have, I didn't buy a wooden handle.
It's like a compass. It's the
composite handle. And you know, you just tend to, with an axe, I mean, the wooden handles take a beating. I mean, they really can with an axe. They do. It's just something that,
it's the last thing you want to break when you're swinging it.
Right. Well, I tell you what I have less issue with it, with them breaking is it's hard to get, I find with, even when you're treating your handles on your wooden handles on axes, it's hard up where it goes up into the axe.
Yes.
Over years, that just shrinks. And it's hard to get any treatment up in there to keep that wood swollen.
Yep.
And and it'll get loose. The head just gets loose on there. And so I find that, that, you know, that's kind of an issue. So the composite handles solve that problem. They use like a resin. It's fixed in there really good. Yeah, I've never had one of those come apart. So
I think that's why we ended up with the, well, the two-wheeled wheelbarrow was because then I could push it without flipping it over easier with heavy things. And it was the comp, I don't know if it's plastic or composite, but the tub is, because we do the same thing. We end up leaving it outside and we were going through them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think the handles are too. And we also ended up upgrading to the rubber wheels, the completely rubber wheels, because they were always going flat. It was driving us
crazy. That's a good idea because I do pump mine up constantly on my wheelbarrow. And now I do have a metal tub. And you do have to, something we didn't even put in our list about painting things, you know, keeping things painted that will rust. Yeah. I mean, that I do paint that wheelbarrow every couple of years because, again, I leave it out and it rusts, you know, and so I do throw some paint on it here and there.
That's what we bought for a tractor because we beat the heck out of the bucket.
So you'll find putting paint on that quite often.
In the winter, my husband will heat the garage for long enough to do that. But we, that's what we do. We like touch up little things that need paint. Because otherwise they're going to rust. So we have to treat that rust and then paint it. Or you treat the rust on like your hoe and stuff like that. And then you oil it. And it just makes things last longer. And especially if, you know, when we were young, we bought everything at yard sales or the cheapest we could find. Now that we're older, we're trying to spend a little bit more money on quality tools or ones that work better ergonomically for our hands and stuff like that. And when you do that, you want to take care of them because you spent, you know, whatever, $100 on this such and such, or, you know, like with our tractor, replacing the bucket would be considerable amount of money. So you do have to start taking care of them.
And it's probably why I've gotten away from, like I said, I was kind of a traditionalist too. If I went to buy a hammer or a shovel or, you know, an axe or whatever, I was always grabbing wooden handles. You know, I just always grabbed the wooden, anything with a wooden handle, because it just seemed more natural and right to me, you know?
Yeah.
But then as I've gotten older and I've realized how much maintenance they take and how long they last versus like the composite or the fiberglass, like a lot of my shovels I'm buying now, they're fiberglass handles. Postal digger, you know, it's fiberglass handles. They just seem to hold up better. You know, they last longer and I don't have to maintenance them really.
Yeah. I think my U-bar, which is a, you know, a U-bar is, what is the other word for them?
Yeah. You talking about the digging fork or the,
fork,
the broad fork.
Broad fork or U-bar. Mine, I think, is composite handles too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they put the fiberglass. A lot of them's fiberglass too. On some
it might
stuff.
Be fiberglass. And, the only thing I don't like about fiberglass is where, as that ages, that really hurts when you get those.
It could if it starts splintering.
If it gets, hurts.
If you leave that stuff out in the outside, it could definitely dry up and turn to that. But that takes a long time, and I'm not so sure. And honestly, I'm not so sure about anything you can put on those to maintain those. I don't know if there's any kind of thing you put on those I think they're just kind of wear and tear and when replacing.
I mean, it does take a while. We've had tentacles that have done that before, but I've never.
Me too.
So far, none of our tools have. But man, those tent poles, you go to put them up and the next thing you know, you got.
I had them in a hunter's blind. And, and I used for several years and they did that. And then I'd run my hand down them one day it left all these little fiberglass fibers in my hand. Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Those don't come out very
No. That hurts for a while too.
That's the handles. I mean, there's lots of things that have handles on them. And then, you know, you went on to talk about blade sharpening, which I'll be honest, that is something my husband usually does. I need to learn it better because there's times when he's gone and I need to do that. But
for a long time, when it came to like for my pruners and loppers, all of them have the replaceable blades. They have like the three screws in them and they will come off and you can replace the blades. And I did that for several years using those. And then I bought one of the little carbide sharpeners. And now I routinely sharpen, I mean, even through the summer, but you could actually just get it ready even in the wintertime and have it ready for spring or whatever. But it's just a small little file. I put a link in the show notes, Amazon. Okay. Yeah, I think it's only like $8 or $9, something like that. It's under $10. And it's just a little like 5 or 6 inch with a carbide file on the end of it. And it works perfect on your loppers and your pruners and you put a nice ledge on them, hit those a few times routinely. Cause man, when you get pruners that start getting dull, they won't you start tearing stuff instead of cutting it clean. I just hate that. It drives me nuts.
Right. Well, and yeah, that's the first thing I use in the spring, because mm-hmm, usually about February, March, I'm pruning my fruit trees.
Yeah. And taking cuttings off things.
And the worst thing to do to a tree when you cut it is use unsharp pruners on them and then tear that bark and stuff. So.
Absolutely. So yeah, keep those sharp. And like I said, I mean, the blades aren't super expensive to replace, but you can make them last for years and years if you just sharpen them routinely. And that little carbide sharpener works really good because it's small enough and you just open them up. And there's some good, I think I even linked to a YouTube video in the, I did. I put a link in there to a YouTube video guy showing you how to sharpen them with that little carbide, file.
I'm gonna buy some of those.
You can do the same thing with your loppers, for your bigger tree loppers, for doing your coppicing and your pollarding and things like that. Use them on those too. So I like to get my chainsaw chains all sharpened up. Yep. And I've got, you asked me about a file set. Like I found a link to a set that has
my husband has his I don't know where he got them. So honestly, I recommend anything.
Yeah, I found a set that looked decent. I bought mine over years and years at local hardware stores hand-me-downs probably from my grandpa and dad and everything else. I have a bunch of different kinds of files that I've just pieced together over many, many years. But you can get nice sets that have the triangle files, the round files, the flat files, you know. And the thing is about it, I think if it's just you probably don't want to get the cheapest sets. But I don't think it's something that you have to get the absolute highest end on either, because files, I don't know. I've never had, granted mine are all old files, but I've never really had an issue with those things getting unusable. You know what I mean? So I don't know how high quality you have to go with that.
I have a whole chainsaw. I need to learn how to sharpen. My husband usually sharpens it for me.
Yep.
Get
those things sharpened up. Yeah.
But I love that chainsaw. But I don't know how he knows how to do it, but it's like, you sound like you do. You just kind of get those little tools out.
Yeah. It's not difficult. You can even buy the little guides that go on a file that will keep your angle right. Yeah, but if you can do it, you can look at the angle on there if you got a good eye for that and know the angle to put on those. And there's a trick to it. I mean, you can definitely dull a chainsaw chain if you don't know how to do it right. So, you know, you want to know how to do it, but it don't take but just a few strokes on each tooth, you know, just three or four strokes on each tooth just to knock a nice little edge on, unless it's a really bad chain, one that's really wore out, but just to keep it sharpened. And, you know,
I think there's a few places too that do it. Like, is it like Ace Hardware and stuff?
It's worth learning to do. It's not hard.
It is.
Wear gloves when you do it, because you can absolutely cut your hand pulling that chain around, because you want to constantly be moving that chain. So wear gloves when you do that. Because I have actually done it in the woods out one time and just grabbed it bare hand and pull it back. And I can do it pretty good, but if you're careful. But if you go a little high on one of them teeth, you can cut your fingers pretty good. And I've done that. So be careful with that. So it's just better to use some gloves, but not hard to do once you learn how to do it. It's especially if you get one of those little guides that set your angle for you. So where you can't really go the wrong angle, those make it real easy too. They also have power ones, little electric ones that you can hit it with.
I recently saw those.
Yeah, those work nice too. My grandpa always used those.
I mean, if you were using your chainsaw just a ton, I can see where something like that would be really.
Yeah, they're nice. They're quicker. Yeah. I mean, you can do it a lot quicker with one of those for sure. Axes. Keep, you know, a nice flat file on an axe. There's a skill to that, knowing the right angles. Because if you go too narrow on your angles, it'll actually, the axe will actually dull faster. So there's a nice medium there where you get a nice sharp axe, but you don't make it too pointy to where it dulls too fast. So there's just a happy medium there to learn how to do that. It's kind of like the old story, you know, about the old man who's chopping wood next to a young guy who's way more fit and better shape and out there, and they're chopping wood. And the old man takes a break, you know, every couple hours and just disappears for a few minutes, you know, and then comes back. And at the end of the day, he's got a way bigger pile of, a split wood right. than the young yeah. guy. And he's like, how is that possible? He says, because when I take a break, I'm sharpening my axe, you know, keeping it sharp. And I'm going to tell you, a sharp axe will definitely split wood a whole yeah. lot better than a dull one. I know that.
And it's safer, too.
Yes, it's much safer. All tools are really a lot safer when they're sharp. So, yeah, yeah absolutely. Yeah. Knives included. Saw blades. Now, if you're using like hand saws, cross-cut saws, all kinds of saws, all your different hand saws, I have a bunch of saws. There's a real skill to sharpening those because they're depending on how small the teeth are, especially, and how many teeth you have, it can be a pretty tedious process, but it's a nice skill to have. What I like to do is take a couple 2x4s and clamp the saw blade in that, and it gives you a little more stability when you're filing. It doesn't get that rock, and I just put a couple clamps on and I pinch it. And I just leave the teeth sticking up above those, just right above those 2x4s. So I can get in there and I can just kind of lay on them 2x4s and kind of run the file back and forth across there. And it just gives me a kind of a guide that way. And it keeps that blade from flexing while I'm doing it. But there's a real trick to that, and being able to identify which way to go on the different teeth, because you want to alternate back and forth. One right. side, go down one side, then flip the saw around, then do the other side, every other tooth, generally how they're set up. But you watch some videos on that before you try that.
There's probably some, but there's some, find somebody that knows what they're doing,
yeah,
which will be pretty obvious in the YouTube video. Or
but if you've ever yeah. used a dull handsaw versus a sharpened handsaw, it is night and day difference. I mean, you will whip through a piece of wood so fast with a handsaw, even if it's good and sharp. So,
okay.
But it's a little bit of a tedious process, especially if you got one of them saw blades with a lot of teeth, you know, and they're different right. saws for different projects, depending on what you're cutting, how you're cutting it. But yeah, some of them are really hard to cut. Some of them are hard to file. Some of them aren't. Now, those are your, generally those are your little angle or little triangle looking files or your square files, the real small okay. ones, where okay. the round ones are more your chainsaw files.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen those or not. Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever sharpened manual saw blades, because we really don't use them that often.
I find I use them quite a bit if I just need to cut something really fast or whatever.
I would like
whatever.
The idea of using them, but I haven't. So that's good to know.
When I'm doing little word working projects with my grandson, especially, we break out the hand tools. I mean, when I say the hand tools, I mean like the hand saws and even like the hand crank that's drills. Fun. We'll get the hand crank drill out and use that. And that's fun because he just thinks that's neat to use the actual tools like it. And it's safer for a kid than breaking out the power tools. He's 5 years old, so I don't really like, but he loves to grab the saw and just cut it a piece of wood. He thinks that's fun. So,
well, I mean, people in the past built entire homesteads with
Yes, exactly. So yeah, it's nice to have them on hand and keeping them sharp. So that's something I like to do. Get your lawnmower blades sharpened. Now those I usually do with a bench grinder. I just run down my bench grinder, but
I think my husband does too.
Now, here's the thing, though. Get you one of them little balancers. I don't know if your husband's probably got one, if he's balancing the because if you get grind one side off more than the other, your lawnmower will actually get a vibration, a really heavy vibration. If you that lawnmower blade is actually balanced to keep vibration out of that motor. So you want to keep the balance. You want to take the exact same amount off of each side when you're sharpening them. So, yeah, there's a little it's like a couple bucks for these little. It's just a little angled
with
a hole in the center, and you set it on it and it kind of balances it out. You can see it's balanced, but yeah, have one of those on hand because those are nice to keep it balanced when you're sharpening it.
Right.
So I like to do that. So, you know, there's probably other things that need sharpened. Of course, your knives and things that you're going to use for processing and things like that.
Well, your hoe and your horseshoe hoe, even shovels. I mean, you're sticking them in the dirt constantly.
Hitting rocks and everything else, taking chunks out of.
Which is why, as much as I like to be barefoot, when I'm in my garden using shovels and stuff like that, and I have my sharp tools, I do wear my boots.
Mm-hmm. But it's worth taking a little time. It's worth taking a little time to keep an edge on these things, keeping things sharpened up, and it will make your job a lot easier come spring when you start using these tools again, for sure. And you won't have to take the time to do that. Now, something that I like to inspect, and whether you're comfortable fixing them or repairing them or not, is up to you and where you're at in your comfort level, but that's electrical cords. Safety, be safe, you know, look at your power cords. If you don't feel comfortable changing one, repairing one, take it to somebody and get it done. It's a whole lot cheaper than buying a whole nother piece of electric equipment, you know, a skill saw or a jigsaw or whatever you're using. your drills, your power drills that have actual plug-in cords. You know, check all your cords, make sure they're not split and cracked, and be safe, and you're not going to get electrocuted or anything.
Yeah,
so
that wouldn't be good, or create fires or whatever.
Absolutely. And not everybody's safe or feels safe messing with those to fix them and repair them. And that's fine. But get somebody to do that. It'll still be cheaper than buying a whole new one, more than likely. Yeah. So, but it's a good time to get your list and get those repairs, especially if you have to send them off to get them fixed. This is a good time to do it, for something like that. Tires. You added tires on there.
We don't use a lot. I've never used a lot of equipment on our small homestead, but now that we're on our bigger homestead, we actually have a tractor tire that we babied all summer because it, you know, somehow it has a bulge in it. Who knows? Running over stumps, all sorts of stuff. So we'll be getting that. We'll be either ordering a new one or getting it fixed this winter, just because it's the best time to do it. But inspect them. I mean, we were surprised. We didn't even notice it until we were just inspecting the tractor after bringing it home and looking at it. So, you know, sometimes you don't notice it. You don't actually put a hole in it, right? Or it's got a really tiny leak. So it's just a good time to check tractor tires, or your maybe replace your wheelbarrow tires with the completely rubber ones, or, you know, there's a lot of different tools that possibly would have tires, you know?
Yeah. And actually, when you're dealing with bigger equipment like that, it's a good time to check everything. I mean, if there's any kind of front end components that are getting loose, or, you know, bearings that need replaced, or just anything like that, it's a great time to really go all the way through it. And just, if you know that something felt a little off, check it out and get that stuff replaced in the wintertime. It's the time to do it for sure.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And then, we talked about this already, but treating rust.
Yeah. And, you know, you can, there's different ways to treat rust. You can sand it off. You can, there's actually some mild acids that will eat it off without doing any damage to the tool. Sometimes that might even be better, because when you're sanding stuff, you're actually taking some of the metal with you, obviously.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times those mild acids will clean it off without doing that. So sometimes there's ways to do that too. I can't even think of what they are, but I've used,
I know
them in
my
the past.
Husband uses, there's, it depends on, obviously it depends on what you're using it on. I mean, my husband uses some kind of product, but that's the tractor.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was in my garden, I would want it to be more organic and paint or anything in the garden. But, with the tractor, we want to keep the rust off of it. I mean, that was a big investment. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. There's a lot you can do with, again, cleaning, repair, and maintaining, doing services on them, whatnot. But sometimes you just have to repair something. You just flat out have to replace it or repair it. And I'm in this mentality. You know, so many people, and we talked about this on the last episode about how I went out to find an axe handle and couldn't find one. All you could find was the axes. And it just drove me crazy that we're in this mentality now that where we don't replace broken equipment or repair broken equipment, we just replace it. You know, you break an axe handle, you go buy a whole new axe. You know, a shovel handle, you go buy a whole new shovel. You don't replace the handle. And I hate that mentality. It just, I mean, there's a time for that maybe when it's something's, you know, really seriously bad, or you just feel like there's enough wear and tear on the other part to where, hey, I might as well get a new one. There's a time for that. But a lot of times, especially when an axe or a shovel, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the main component. You just need to replace the handle. So it's a great time to replace a broken handle or a cracked handle on something. I've had a lot of those, you know, over the years, just get a crack or whatever. And it's just a good time to get on that and just replace it. You know, if you can find one locally, I had trouble finding one locally, but you can find things like that online with very little trouble. I mean, you know, but I will tell you, there is a skill to putting in axe handles and shovel handles and things like that and getting them good and tight to where they're going to hold up and last. And you can find some good YouTube videos on that, but knowing how to space those out and get the wood to swell and certain things. I mean, you can, you know, it's a forgotten skill for a lot of people. It really is. It's not even something it's something I had to learn as an adult later in life, because I remember my dad doing it, but I don't remember him ever showing me how to do it. And I remember the first time I put an axe handle in. Well, first of all, it's so super tight when you first get them. It's like, how do you get that in there? And then how do you get it to where it stays tight? And there's a skill to it. There's a, you know, knowing how to do it right. So yeah, I'll just turn you to YouTube for that, because you will find, it's the kind of information you really need to see some videos on and understand better. It's kind of like, that's how I feel about the sharpening actual, saw blades, hand saw blades.
Yeah, you just kind of have to see.
Go watch a video or something on that and really see how people do that. It's hard to put that into words to help you understand it. But right. Yeah, there's a trick to that. It's a good time to go through all of your stuff and make sure all the screws and bolts are tight. Yeah. Things get loose, like the handles on your saw blades or on your saws. I'm using my hand saws. The handles will get all wobbly and loose because the screws and bolts and nuts came loose, or stuff's loose on your lawnmower or whatever. I mean, just go through things, make sure things are tight, are holding together good, tighten them up, nuts will loosen up over time. Sometimes they just need to tighten them up, or you might even have to replace a bolt or a nut or a screw in this or that and get things tightened up. So it's a good time to go through and look at those things. Hoses and belts on your equipment. Look at
hoses
that stuff.
And belts. Yeah. Well, and even your lawn hoses.
Yes, that too. I'm even thinking about just the equipment.
Yeah.
You're dealing with hydraulic hoses now on equipment.
Yeah.
So you got hydraulic hoses, you got your water, your coolant hoses and things on equipment. And then we get into our garden hoses and things. And absolutely, it's a time to repair those things. Look and see for cracks and splits and, wear and tear, and just fix
and
or replace.
Even in some of those, talking about, fix it up, wear it out type of thing. Even hoses have repair kits. You can
cut
them off and make them shorter.
Absolutely. I put a link in the show notes for some repair hose repair attachments. Now, here's the thing, though. I have used several different kinds. Stay away from the plastic ones. They're garbage. I'm telling you, they're garbage. You get the ones that are either zinc or copper or brass or whatever, and put those together. They hold up so much better. They seal so much better.
Yeah.
I've bought those plastic ones, and man, they crack and split and bust. And I mean, they're just junk. I haven't found one plastic one yet ones you repair hoses with or put an end on a hose with that hold up good. They're just horrible. But get the good metal ones and they hold up really, really good.
Yeah. And there's these little things. I don't know if you've used those where our spigot comes out is usually where there's a lot of wear and tear from yanking on it. Mm-hmm. We've found those little, it's like a springy thing that you can put over the hose.
Like the quick releases.
Like an extension. Yeah. And that like actually has helped us not tear that end of the hose apart.
Oh, you're talking about it's just a spring that basically keeps it from flexing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And
that's
helped extend our hoses, because that's where we get a lot of wear and tear on them.
They do actually make the, I was thinking maybe you're talking about the, it's almost like an air chuck for like air hoses, but it's for water and it's like a quick release.
Oh, yes.
And they just pop together. That way you ain't constantly doing the turning, which will actually break those sometimes when you're turning them. You just do the quick pop on, pop off kind of things. Those are nice. I actually don't have any of those on my hoses, but I have seen those and they're really sweet. And I'll probably have those. Yeah.
Yeah, we have the spring thing, and then we have the quick release.
Yeah, those are nice. I've been to people's houses that use those. Those are nice.
That the twisting motion, which eventually will ruin your hoses, and we've started as well as everything else. Like I was saying earlier, we've started not buying the cheap hoses and started investing a little more money in good hoses, because we just were buying new ones all the time.
Right. So, yeah. Absolutely. So that's good advice. But there's so many things around your property that you're using, of course, that it's just the time to look at what you have. I mean, we all have different things. Now I think about, just even all the hand tools and stuff I have. I mean, it's a good time to make sure those things are good and cleaned up, and which I feel like brings us to the next topic, which is organizing and storing your homestead tools. With my actual, I've got, I've done a lot of mechanic work in my life, so I've got a pretty big mechanic toolbox.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, through the summer when I'm doing a lot of projects and working on stuff, it seems like most of them tools end up out of my toolbox and piled up on my bench somewhere. And then, so this is a really good time to say, okay, let's get these back in the toolbox where they belong, in the right places, organized. Let's get them hung up where they belong. Let's put them in the right places. And yeah, with my mechanic toolbox, that's a big deal. I'm all the time pulling out screwdrivers and pliers, and I'll open a drawer up one day to get screwdrivers, and I have like zero Phillips screwdrivers in there, but they're scattered everywhere. I mean, I probably have 30 of them.
Exactly.
Where are they? You know, they're everywhere. So it's like I got to go on the hunt then. And then I spend more time looking for the tools to do a job than it takes me to do the job. And it happens time and time and time again. And I'll say, when I was younger, it wasn't that big of a deal. I seemed like I was way more organized, but I was like, why is that? Is it because I'm that less organized as an older person? And I don't think that's the case. I think it's just that I have so much more stuff now.
Yeah.
When I was kind of like a forced minimalist back then, you know, I didn't have the money to buy a lot of stuff. So I had what I had, and it was just easier to keep organized, you know. And now I have, you know, I'm 50 years old. So it's like, I have a lot of stuff, you know. I've accumulated a lot of things over the years, and those things take up a lot of space, and they're everywhere.
That's exactly the same thing that happens at our house. I mean, I wish I could say that I'm super organized, but as we've gotten older, we've got more going on. We have more stuff, which is good and bad, but my husband's also pretty handy like you, and so he fixes everything. It's rare that we have anybody fix anything. So there's a tool for everything.
Yeah.
You know? And then on top of, like, he will do small plumbing, and so he's got tools for that. And
It's part of being self-sufficient. I mean, knowing how to, having the tools to do those things. Yeah.
Yeah. So keeping those organized has definitely, and then sometimes organizing things costs money. So when you don't have money to buy shelving or proper toolboxes, that kind of is harder. So, but
But you can even build a lot of stuff. I mean, there was a time when metal toolboxes, big mechanic set toolboxes, didn't exist. People built cabinets to keep the stuff in, and they had boards they hung stuff up on, and, you know, they just did certain things. But, like, now we have, our tools are a little more sophisticated maybe, and we might have to have a certain kind of a setup for things. And I think about, like, I have a ton of stuff that takes rechargeable batteries. You know, I have my drills, and I have some different kinds of saws and little grinders. And I have a lot of stuff that needs these rechargeable tools. And so I built a battery charging station, you know, and I actually built it out of wood. You can buy them too, like the wet metal rack ones. There's a lot of different plans on YouTube. I linked to one. It's actually the one that's pretty similar to the one I built. And you can hang your drills and tools actually hang on the bottom of it. And then I have, like, the complete, all the, I wired it, you know, put on my, the outlets and things are up there.
A power strip
across there where everything's plugged in. And I have all my, you know, I have it all organized and where I can plug all the batteries in right above the tool. And then some tools I have two or three batteries for, so I might have a couple chargers, and I just keep everything kind of like that, you know, because, you know, for one thing, as soon as one starts wearing down, I'm popping it back in the charger, grabbing the next one, putting it in, and I just try to keep it super organized. And I hang that back up underneath those batteries. And then if it's like a drill, for example, I have like three levels. I have, like, where the drill actually hangs at the bottom. I have the batteries right above it. And then I have a bigger cabinet area above it, or just a hole basically, but it's a slot, but it's a bigger area. And that's where I keep all the screws and things like that I would need for the drill. You know, just any kind of different drywall screws or wood screws or whatever for my drill, in the boxes above that. So I kind of have everything there when I need it, instead of hunting all over my garage for that. So, the power drill is probably, or my cordless drill is probably the most used, probably the most used tool on my homestead. I mean, period.
Believe it or not, I actually use one a lot cleaning.
Yeah. I mean, just,
they have little ends you can get.
Yeah. Rubber brushes. Pads and stuff. Yeah. Well, yeah.
They're amazing. And then my pole chainsaw has a battery.
Yeah.
And speaking of missing objects, when we brought everything home from the camper, somehow I cannot find the charger for that.
Exactly.
And I know it's here.
If you had the charging station, it'd be right there.
Yeah, now that things have slowed down. But I'm thinking, man, a charging station would be really
cool. Yeah, there's some really neat designs. I've seen them made out of PVC, where they, like, take a bigger piece of PVC and it slides into that. I've seen mine's out of wood. Works good. But the PVC would be really easy, too. But everything is so expensive. Like, honestly, you could build this out of pallet wood. You can.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. I'm like, man, we got lots of. My husband has access to really nice pallets at work because they get heavy metal. And
show him some of these designs. Like, he'd probably love to get in the garage this winter and make a nice little charging station like that. I bet he'd love. That'd probably be right up his alley for making. And they're not hard. It's not like a high skill thing to make. I mean, it's just some shelving. And I mean, just the way you design it, it has to be
functional, not beautiful. Yeah.
It's nice to have something that looks nice, you know, something that's Instagram worthy, right?
Well, right. But if you don't have great skills and you're working on your skills.
Hard to keep up with Instagram worthiness.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even try anymore. but yeah, that's one thing you can make. There's also garden tool hangers. Now you can buy those. They make some really nice ones for hanging your shovels and your rakes and your hoe and all the things up, keeping everything nice and organized, your axes, whatever. But you can make them pretty easy too. Again, you can use pallet wood. You can use some scrap 2x4s, whatever. They're not hard to make, and you can keep all them things up off the floor, hanging on a wall out of your way.
Yeah.
Right there where you know where they're at when you need one. And again, lots of you search garden tool hanger or tool You'll hanger on YouTube or Pinterest. You're going to see all the pictures or videos you want to see of them. There's tons of them out there. You're not a builder. You can buy them. Amazon sells them. Nice little wire ones or metal ones or even wooden ones. You can buy all kinds of different ones. They're you can buy them, but they're really, really worth having just to keep things out of your way and keep them where you can find them. You know, that's the big thing. When you need it, you know right where it's at. You go get it, and there you have it. So you save your time. I hate wasting time looking for stuff, even though I do a lot of it.
I need to focus a lot on this winter, organizing. It would be very helpful.
Now, this came to my mind, and I was thinking about, like, in my greenhouse or even just seed starting in a spring, and that's cleaning and organize all my seed starting tools. I consider my trays and all those things my tools. They're tools. Right. And here's the thing. I tried to buy – I have a bunch of the cheap ones too. But lately, the last couple of years, I've been spending the money to buy the heavier duty ones. I don't know if you've ever seen the ones that are sold by Bootstrap Farmer. They have their own website, or you can go on Amazon. He has a page on. I linked to the one on Amazon, his page on Amazon, and he's got the trays are really thick, like the 10-20 trays you would buy. Right. The 72 cells and the whatever, all the different cells. Okay. They're really thick and they last a long time. And because then once you get those cheap ones, you get at Walmart or whatever, brittle.
Oh my gosh.
They won't last. I mean, one season almost. Yep. Yeah. They're just,
and it's such a waste, not just financially, but
you'll spend just a little bit more money, buy that thicker, heavier, especially if you're going to use something like plastics. We don't like plastics are bad. Right. I mean, let's just admit it. They're just bad for the environment. But if you get something that's multiple use, they can use for years, it's actually not that bad. Yeah. It's actually not really that harmful.
I might order some of those. I've been getting mine at the grocery store, and the grocery store has the same thing where they have the really cheap ones, and then you can get the nicer 10-20 trays. Yeah. These, the ones that I've been using, have been lasting me 2 to 3 years, but I'm going to order one of his and see if it's even thicker.
I feel like if you're fairly not too radical with the ones from Bootstrap Farmer, they can last you for several years. I mean, they're pretty good. Like I said, he sells lots of different stuff there, but you can take a look at his Amazon page, all the listings, or even just go to their website. I think it's just bootstrapfarmer.com, I think.
Yeah.
And he's got some good stuff. And like I said, I'm not tied in with them. I'm not an affiliate for him or anything like that. Just some good stuff there. I mean, I've bought a few of their things in the last couple of years, and it feels like some really high quality stuff.
Well, there's a lot of like Justin Rhodes, I noticed, does this, but also the John Jevons, which I've posted the book a few times with the How to Grow More Vegetables. They actually show you how to build wood ones.
Yep. Make them out of wood. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Not a bad deal. You know, I feel like when
more work intensive, though, the way you have to grow in them. But
and cleaning them.
Yeah.
Because they will. The moisture absorbs into them, and you could get fungus in them. And so I think there's a little bit more risk there when it comes to maybe keeping things clean, which is what I was talking about with cleaning and organizing your seed starting tool. It's a really good time to get them organized, get them stacked, see what you have, what you don't have, what you need to be thinking about getting if you don't have it. So get them organized. That way, you know what you got. When the time comes, you got it. You don't have to put in an order.
Exactly.
Also, you can go ahead and get them cleaned. Clean them up.
What do you clean yours with?
I generally, first I just scrub them with I'll just get some Dawn dish soap, and I'll get soap and water on them and clean them, wash them really good. And then I generally just spritz them with peroxide.
That's what I do.
Exactly. Is that what you do? Yeah. Some people use vinegar.
I wash mine in water. Well, I try to wash them like when it's still warm outside. I try to at least rinse them because mm-hmm. I don't want all of that in my plumbing. But then I do the same thing. I wash them with soap and then I use vinegar.
Okay. Vinegar.
Or not vinegar. I use the
hydrogen peroxide. Yeah. Some people do use vinegar though. Some people spritz vinegar on them.
Vinegar too.
But I just use peroxide. I just get a little spray bottle of that and just spray them down, stack them, let it dry, air dry, and then it's fine. It's ready to go. And I go ahead and get all that done. So that way spring gets here. I can just grab them and start getting my seeds in them, you know, throw some soil in them and start going. And I don't have to think about it. It's one less thing you got to do in that busy springtime. You know, it's ready to go. And I got them all stacked in the greenhouse, ready to rock and roll. You do that with all your pots. Get everything just ready. You know,
there's
just
even your tools.
You can clean up your little, your little hand spades and things like that. Yeah. And just get them ready to go. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how you organize your stuff, but I actually have a 4-cabinet metal. What do you call those? Why am I not thinking of this?
Words are escaping us.
I know. We do this in the morning, folks.
Yeah. I noticed we've been struggling with words a little bit more since we started doing it in the morning.
Like a file cabinet.
Yeah.
We got it for really cheap at like a garage sale or something, a metal filing cabinet. Mm-hmm. And I actually put a lot of my tools and seeds in folders in that.
That's what I do with my seeds also.
Yeah.
I have I use the, I don't have a big filing cabinet. I use those file. This is a whole different. This isn't about tools or anything. This is probably on our next week's topic, actually.
Well, but it's organizing.
Yeah. But I actually use the file boxes. Have you ever seen those? They're just like carry boxes, but they're for file folders. Yeah. I have a couple of those, three of those, actually. But what I like about those, I grab the whole box. I can take it out to the garden and I can just have it with me. I pop the lid on it and I start going through those files. And I just have them labeled, you know, whatever different seeds I have. And that's how I use those. It's kind of neat. So we'll probably talk about that.
I have some of my hand tools because I use some of my hand tools inside when I start my gardens in the spring, you know, my seeds and my little seed or my little, you know, my markers, all that kind of little stuff I have in those drawers.
Nice.
It's kind of handy to have it right there, right next to my table that I plant my seedlings on.
Yeah. And it's a good time.
You can get those so cheap on like Marketplace or people just want to get rid of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. They're out there. Yeah. People don't want them big old things in their house anymore. They get rid of them now, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good time just to figure out what you have, what you don't have, have it ready.
Yep.
Get it clean. Yep. So I think it's a biggie. Now I guess this is a little bit out of order, but I also have on this list organizing your tool manuals. I don't know if you guys keep any kind of tool manuals around. Like, you know, everything you buy comes with a 2 or 3 or 4 page little pamphlet on how to maintain it or how to get extra parts for it or a website you can go to get information about it. Yes, you're holding up your binder right now.
I'm holding up a binder. Like I said, my husband has tons and tons of equipment because he's kind of a jack of all trades. So this just one of them for his wire feed welder.
Okay, I do the same thing. I have binders. I have a 3-hole punch. And every time I get anything with a little pamphlet or a little manual of any kind that's not more than just a few pages thick, I smack it with that 3-ring punch and I stick it in a binder. And then on the front of that binder, I will write whatever different things are in that. Like there may be 50 different manuals in one binder, you know, I'll just write, take a Sharpie and write on the manual what tool has the manual in that binder. And just a good way to keep track of those things. Now I will say these days, that's less important than it was 20 years ago when I started doing that because the internet, anything you really need to look up, you can actually search it and usually find the manual or some information about it. But I like having that stuff. It just makes me feel better to have those manuals in a place where I know where they're at. Because if you just throw those things on a bench or over in a corner in a box, you're never going to find them when you need
them. Well, and sometimes you don't have a lot of these manuals, or they used to, I don't know if they do as much now, but they would give you pretty extensive part lists.
Complete schematic.
Extensive schematics of your tractor taken apart and like what that exact screw part number is. And my husband actually uses these a lot.
I have a lot of power tools that have the same thing. I mean, like I got a table saw that have a breakdown of the schematic completely on everything in it. To where if you need one little certain part, you can find that part number and order that part number. So I love having those things on hand.
We're kind of old school. I mean, he uses his phone, but he actually prefers to see it physically in a it's just easier sometimes. It's just easier sometimes to have that book laid out in front of you in a big piece of paper instead of this little tiny screen.
Yeah. Just last week or a couple weeks ago when I was putting together the greenhouse, the aquaponics system, I had my timers, you know, that were in a box. I hadn't used them for a year. I dug them out. I'm like, I don't remember how to set the timers on these because there's nothing really on the timer that says how to do this. And sometimes you have to hold a button for 5 seconds or whatever, do this, do that. I'm like, okay, go find the manual. So I go to the binder, turn it to the man. There it is. There's the instructions. I did actually see it, but what's funny is before I did that, I actually went and I thought, okay, I just Google searched that timer. I found it, but the print was so stinking small on my phone. I was like, I can't even see that. So I went and found the actual manual for it. And I programmed them because I couldn't remember how to do it. Everything just about comes with something like that. And it's just great to have those things organized. And
well, and if you have it organized and in the binder system, sometimes it is quicker to just reach up there and go, oh, there's the binder on that, than it is to actually Google.
Yeah, absolutely. If you know where they're at and you keep them, I mean, I keep them on my bookshelf right next to all my books and stuff. Yep. And I know exactly where they're at and I can just grab them and do it really fast. So that's what I use it for.
Because what do you have here? It has so many things in it now. It's sometimes hard. Like there's 45 models of whatever. So
okay, I'll let you share on this next step. You're talking about numbering and organizing like drawers and totes and things.
And it might be, you know, like going into another podcast, but just speaking quickly on the organizing shadow boards.
Super important.
This is going to sound crazy, but if people don't know what they are, the first time I ever saw one was actually when I was a teenager and we toured a prison and their kitchen utensils.
So you know something's missing.
It was a whole wall full of like pots and knives. And it was like the shape of the knife, for example, this would probably be really important in prison, was on that wall. So if that knife was missing,
dumb, but I do the exact same thing here in my own shop.
So you can do this with like your screwdrivers, your wrenches, anything like that. And you can see if it's missing or not, that part's missing. And then it gives it always a place to return it. So even if I was out in the shop helping clean up, I wouldn't have to say, where do you want this put?
I did this years ago for my wife and kids, because when they would go out to get a tool or took a tool back out to put it up, I'd hang the tool up and then I just took a Sharpie or a magic marker and I just went around it on the pegboard to show the outline of what it was. So when they took it to put it back up, they knew exactly how it went back up there. And when my kids were little, I mean, they were bad about just take us back out to the garage and they just throw it on a bench or whatever, on a cart or whatever, and it never gets put up. And like I said, I was a lot more organized when I was younger. So everything had a specific place. And then they knew where to put it. And I think it's a great idea. I still have the pegboards out here with the outlines on them. Right. Not everything's there, but they're still there.
And then the winter is a perfect time.
I think it's a good idea.
And then pegboards. My husband has, now I think the pegboard material has gotten pretty expensive, but, as always, we found something at a garage sale. My husband bought a whole bunch of pegboard material with peg thingies and, you know, above his workbench in the garage, he's got tons of pegboards. And, if I ever have a dream homestead, I don't know if any of you homestead people have ever seen Julia Child's kitchen, but it was just basically tons of pegboards and everything
in the kitchen.
I love the idea of a Pinterest kitchen, but I also love the idea of that just total functionality of it.
Practical
right
and functionable. Sometimes
pegboards are fantastic for things. And then QR codes.
Oh, yeah. Tell me all about this. This sounds interesting.
So this is definitely major modern homesteading with, using your cell phone. But there are these stickers that you can buy, and it comes with a free app. And the stickers is a QR code. And what it is you take this, you have like a tote. So this would be like for your smaller, say you have, 15 different kinds of screws. And you have them in a tote because it just works better. Mm-hmm. You would take this QR code you would scan it, and then and under that file, it creates a file just for that QR code. You can put a picture. You can take a picture with your phone and put the picture in that. And then you can list everything that's in that box. And the nice part is you can be in your garage and say, I wonder where that box of screws are. And if my wood screws that are 4 inches long are in that box. So you can actually go into your phone, into the app, and put wood screws. And it'll tell you the exact location of the tote and which tote it's in. And then you say you come downstairs to your basement, you scan it, and it'll say, yep, this is the tote that it's in. So you can be like at the grocery store, you can be at the parts store and say, do I have this at home? Yeah. Total technology, but fantastic. And you can do this with so many things.
Oh yeah. We use so many totes here. Like half of my barn is filled with just totes. Cause like when I took down the Agribon, my row cover this year, it went in a tote. You know, I rolled it up, I put it in totes. I've got all the different, you know, the things that hold the clamps, all that stuff in a tote. And then I might, you know, we might take whatever. I mean, the garden supply stuff, if you're putting that in a tote or whatever, and you could actually put what different ones are in that tote and stacked up and QR code on it. I love the idea of that.
And it's not expensive. I think I'm looking right now. So it's $12 and you get 45 labels.
Yeah, that's so not
45
bad.
Totes. And then
It comes with basically like an app too or whatever.
The app is free.
Okay.
I'm sure that there's more than just this brand out there. This is just the brand that I've used. I actually have used this to organize people's houses when I clean their house.
Nice. I love that. You can do it. You can use that in closets, stuff, under the bed, stuff, whatever. Wherever you're stacking of. Anything.
The sky is the limit. You can do it with work stuff. You can do it with stuff you have stored in a storage unit, whatever. It's just amazing. But you can also do this really cheap if you're like, if money is really tight or you don't want to do, because the one thing you do have to have with this tote scan, I did play around with it. You do have to have, somehow it's stored in a cloud somewhere, because if you don't have internet, you can't access it.
Right.
So you could do this easily with, this is how I started this system was, I don't remember where I saw it, but we used 3x5 cards and you put everything that's in that tote on a 3x5 card. You number the tote, you put the 3x5 card in like a 3x5 card holder, and then you can search through that index and go, my screws are in box 45, and you have where your box 45 is on that card, and where it's at, and you have your box labeled, and then you can also put it on the outside of the box. That's like the low tech way, and obviously would take longer, and you wouldn't be able to tell what's there from somewhere else, but you don't need the internet for that either. So it's very similar to the QR code, but
a little more old school. My current system is stick it in a tote and then try to remember which tote I stuck it in last year when all the totes look the same. So I end up opening up like 30 totes trying to figure out which one has that stuff in it.
That's what happened to us too. And then when I was, you know, at a few homes that I clean, I do other things for them. And every year I would waste time trying to find the specific Santa Claus that they wanted displayed for Christmas. And I was like, which of the 40 boxes of Christmas stuff is this in? So it does help not have, it saves so much time. So it's one of those little things that you can save time.
All the things, it wouldn't even have to be just what you consider homesteading stuff. It could be your craft stuff, your, just whatever you're doing. Anything. Just
herbs,
whatever.
Kids
winter clothing packed away in the summer, summer clothing in the winter, and you put it in a tote and dig it out when you need it. And absolutely. Yeah.
I have this one. It'll let you tell you where, I mean, it lets you put where you have it. So you could have it in the attic. You could have it in the garage. Mm-hmm. You could have it in the basement. You could have it in a spare room. It lets you label exactly where that's at. So it's just, and the nice part too is you can search it when you're not home. You can say, okay, I have these screws or don't I?
Yeah.
So,
I did. There was something else that I think we kind of skipped over, but I was also thinking about all your preservation tools. Like now this is something though that you may not actually have in the winter. It might be something you might actually have to do more like in the spring, because a lot of your stuff's full right now. So like your canning jars and your lids and your rings, and having all that stuff cleaned and organized and put in a place. But like I said, a lot of that stuff's actually full right now. So it might not be the best time to do that, yeah. But it is one of them tools for your kitchen and for your preserving that at some point you want to do that with, you know, get that stuff cleaned and organized and ready to go, but more towards the end of winter.
Yeah. I mean,
probably better time for that.
You can check all of your, like even canning stuff. It's a great time. Once I'm still canning.
But inventory.
Yeah. Inventory. Yeah. Like, do I need more lids? Do I need more? Well, and yeah. Even like my canners this year, I had to buy a new seal, which can take months.
Yeah, go through them.
Right now, with everything going on, it took me, I think, 6 or 8 weeks to get a new seal. Mm-hmm. But I noticed mine was starting to get old. You can take your canner in and get it calibrated.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff that's better to do now than when you need it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, just order new parts, different canners.
So many things.
Parts.
Yeah. And again, we're definitely in that mentality. You know, repair, fix, you know, right. Maintain instead of replace it. You know, there's a time.
Well, some of that canning equipment is as much as a power saw. You
yeah.
Know?
It's
you
crazy.
Get a new All-American.
Yeah.
It's like
stuff
$500, $600.
Expensive. Yeah. And if you're going to be, you know, part of homesteading, I feel like is frugality and using things wisely. And if you know how to repair, you take the time to repair and maintain and clean the store so you don't lose things. You know, I mean, I've bought things that I thought I lost and then I found it a month later. You know, I thought, well, I don't know what happened to that. I must have loaned it out. And then a month later, I find it somewhere and I already bought another one, you know, because I didn't know where it was. Just you can definitely be a lot more frugal if you just.
Well, and some of this stuff, you know, you keep it maintained. You can pass it down generations. I have three canners. Two of them were from my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law's in her mid-80s. And my canners are from the 1950s and 60s. But because they were maintained and you can buy parts for them still, I'm still using them.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of these things you can maintain and pass down for generations. So.
Yep. It just, there's probably a lot bigger list, but there's things that you have that we don't have. And there are things that you just have to think about, you know, look at through your entire, you know, list of tools and equipment and whatever you have and say, is there anything in here that needs maintained, cleaned, purchased, replaced, you know, or whatever. I mean, just go down the list and see what you have. And everybody has different things, different hobbies, different equipment for different things. So just see what you need and how best to take care of it. And this is a great time. This is a great time to really be thinking about that and start maybe set aside a weekend and just say, this weekend's going to be for this and we're going to make this happen and just do it. And I think it's just a wise thing to do. So we will have all the links in the show notes, the tools we mentioned, some supplies, some YouTube videos, so you got a Wikipedia in here for the shadow board. We have a lot of links in here. So
yeah, in case I didn't explain it well enough.
Yeah. Well, it's probably just shows the pictures. I think it's not real difficult, but I think, you know, people can get some ideas of what you're talking about if they need to. But yeah, go check those out. And if there's anything in there that maybe you want a little more information on, you can find it in the show notes. So head on over there and get that information. You can find Rachel's information and her blog at
rewilderlife.com.
Rewilderlife.com. You can find what I'm writing and talking about at redemptionpermaculture.com. And check things out there. Rachel's been more faithful about blogging lately than I have been. I'm trying to do one here and there.
The last few weeks have been slim, but I'm working on some today. So
I got to get back in the mode here. It's been a couple weeks since I've been really hitting that hard, but I need to get back at doing that because there's lots of stuff. I've got some ideas to write on and I got a list. I just got to get to writing. So I got to get back on that. But check those out. Check out that. If you're not a member of the Homestead Front Porch Facebook group, look that up on Facebook, Homestead Front Porch. There's two questions you got to answer yes to, and you're in. And it's a great group. Getting a lot more interaction in there lately. Been some great, great folks bringing up some great topics. Lots of stuff being shared. I really enjoyed the meal pictures around Thanksgiving. All the goodies. That was fun to look at and made me hungry. And I'm sure you know, when garden season gets here, there's all kinds of great information popping up and it's just a great group, great people and a lot of great information being shared in there. So come be a part of it and be a contributor and receiver of everything going on in there. It's good stuff. So, anything else you got, Rachel?
I think that's it for this week.
All right, folks. Happy homesteading. God bless. Have a great week.
And grow where you're planted.
Looking around, I find the sea. I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee. My world, I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They've never eaten from their land like we do here every day. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her front porch. Hunting and fishing like a kid, once you've done all of your chores. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. Country or city, there's a way to make this change. You gotta start today.